Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, time for Fast Track. Let's see one side of the coin, John. The Bulls would have won a seventh championship in the lockout shortened 99 season. Other side of the coin, they would have fallen short. Call it in the air.
Not betting against Michael Jordan. Heads.
Michael gets his seventh.
There you go. Heads it is. Ireland, it's to you.
Okay. Mace, we've been talking a little about this. Last night on Quibi, Blackballed made its debut. It's the story from the player's perspective on what happened when Donald Sterling was suspended for life in 2014 for his racist comments about Magic Johnson and the Clippers. Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, Doc Rivers, Matt Barnes, and J.J. Redick are all in the documentary.
Yep.
I'm going to play for you the first part of the trailer. This is less than a minute. Listen to it, and then I'll have a question. Hit it, Fudge.
Do you know that you have a whole team that's black that plays for you?
Do I know?
The Clippers, burdened by ignorant, racist comments made by its owner.
I support them and give them food.
When I listened to it, I had to listen to it again because I was like, man, he didn't just say that.
If you don't stand for something, then you're part of the problem.
Who gives it to them? Does someone else give it to them? Who makes the game? Do I make the game or do they make the game?
Each generation is faced with the issues of their times.
Seeing CNN and Fox News and realizing this was much bigger than anything I had ever faced before.
Social injustice, it's bigger than basketball. It's bigger than anything.
Words hurt. I was always taught to fight.
Okay. Boy, that's uncomfortable to listen to.
Yeah, it is.
Looking back, I'm actually shocked the Clippers didn't boycott those games. They were starting a playoff series against the Warriors, and the Clippers had a really good team that year. But at the time, Adam Silver was still gathering information and had yet to announce Sterling's punishment. Here's my question. If this happened again today, if another owner was caught on tape saying those things, do you think the players still play the next day? A lot's changed since 2014.
I don't think they do. I don't think they do. But you know what? In the moment, John, I believe they should have boycotted.
I'm not sure either. Yep, it totally does. Because here's why. They had fought all year, and they don't play for Donald Sterling. Like, we can't control what the owner of our company does. You know, we kind of do the show for each other and for the audience. If the head of Disney or the head of ESPN did something completely reprehensible, I'm not so sure you and I boycott the show.
Right.
We weren't
on the radio saying boycott those games.
No, and because I actually sympathize the spot the players were in.
Yeah.
Why should they throw away their best chance in a championship? But, like you hear Chris Paul saying that thing, if you don't stand up against it, you're part of it. And ever since, like this was, remember Mace, this was after Trayvon Martin.
Yep.
And I think Trayvon Martin kind of changed everything, because when that happened, all the Miami Heat took that picture where they were all wearing hoodies, and President Obama came out and said, hey, he goes, let me explain something to you people. The people in the African-American community just watched that and thought, not that it could happen to anybody, they thought it could be me that was just, you know, walking down the street wearing a hoodie and got shot and killed. It was a transcendental moment. I think that it changed. And then, so then Donald Sterling happens.
Right.
And I thought the players, and you hear them explain their side of it, I thought they did almost everything they could do, and they ended up winning that series. And it was a very close series. Chris Paul won it on a circus shot at the end. And then the next year is when the Warriors began their championship run. But I have great sympathy for what they went through. But I now think that today's NBA players are now so much more outspoken and yeah. so much more socially active.
And what's weird is it hasn't been that long. Like, that seems like forever ago. You said it was 24
years ago. Yeah.
6 years ago. It feels like the world has changed so much. The way players react, like LeBron, this terrible case of Ahmaud Arbery down in Georgia, and LeBron has been tweeting about that, and a lot of NBA players have been tweeting about that. Just absolutely reprehensible murder of an unarmed black guy jogging. I mean, just horrifying. Guys are willing to step out with a strong opinion now, whereas at that point, but you're right, they may have been. What would Adam Silver have done? If those players would have boycotted, I don't think Adam Silver would have hung a forfeit on them.
No. As a matter of fact, I'll take it a step further. I think had they said they're boycotting, the Warriors would have said, so are we. They would have joined them,
yes.
and they said. And I think Adam Silver's only play at that point would have been to suspend the playoffs until his investigation was over and then restart the playoffs after he came to that conclusion.
Yeah.
Stephen A. was in Los Angeles. Stephen A. Smith, who's in this doc, was in Los Angeles when Adam Silver made his ruling. And I remember watching it through Stephen A. I was in the other room, and he walked in and he went, I'm satisfied. Adam Silver gets it. And I think if you watch Adam Silver now, he handed down that punishment. Remember, he was a brand new commissioner. This was really the first big test of his stewardship.
Yeah.
And he left no wiggle room whatsoever. He goes, effective immediately, I'm banning Mr. Sterling for life
yep.
from the NBA. And he knew Sterling would sue, and he knew that the other owners, you know, he talked to him, but he knew he had to do something, and he handled that brilliantly. He got that team sold to a very lucrative ownership in Steve Ballmer and got it done quickly. And I think that if you look back and you want to grade Adam Silver on how he handled that, you give him an A. But I think if it happened today, if another owner in another sport or even in the NBA came out and made those comments, I think Adam's only play at that point is stop the season
yeah.
till you get to the bottom of it, and then we go. I don't think the Clippers would have been out there on a limb on their own. I think the Warriors would have joined him. And who knows, maybe LeBron, who I think was in Cleveland at the time, would have said, you know what, none of us are playing.
Right, right.
You guys get to the bottom of this, and then we'll play.
Yeah, I think it would have accelerated a lot more quickly in 2020 than it did in 2014. God, it seems like forever ago that happened. What a surreal story.
And again, let me reiterate what I said earlier in the show. It's a well-done documentary that they should be proud of. Quibi, you can only watch on your phone.
Yep.
Quibi, it's a documentary worth watching. No one is going to stick with your service until you get this thing fixed where we can screen mirror to a big screen so we can watch it with our family and our friends. Nobody wants to gather around an iPhone and watch anything. I understand what you were trying to do. You just missed the mark. Get this screen mirroring thing fixed immediately, and I'll even recommend your programming higher. But it's a good documentary. You do have to watch it on your phone. Take that for what it's worth.
All right. Funch.
Fast Track.
By the way, I want to say, Lindsay is off today. We'll see. We don't know exactly how long she's going to be off. She's taking a day or two off here. But Funch is doing a fantastic job running the entire show today.
Yeah, literally doing everything.
Doing everything. Yeah. All right, New York-based photographer Spencer Tunick has been having people pose nude on video conferences for his new project, Stay Apart Together. It's a provocative series that features screenshots of people around the world striking poses from their respective homes. He's been sharing the images on his Instagram page through photos, some of them blurred, to keep himself from being kicked off the internet. John, is this art?
Yes. People overreact to nudity. It's in movies. It's in magazines. You don't have to look at it if you don't want to. You don't have to go seek this guy's art out if you don't want to. The minute, Mace, you begin to stifle what is art and what isn't,
yep.
You don't want to put limits on people's creativity. Of course it's art. Do you disagree?
No, I've been to Spencer Tunick's page, his Instagram page, and it's all incredibly tastefully done. It is blurred out where it needs to be blurred out, but it is in a very weird way art, and it will be, you know, 20 years from now, when all this has passed, it will be a really interesting piece of history as art, these poses of people on screenshots that he's used. It'll be like, remember that time. And look at these people that were living through this. It's a really cool thing. I recommend his page. I guess I'm recommending nudity, but Stay Apart Together, Spencer Tunick. It's a really interesting piece of art. Funch!
Fast Track.
Okay, Mace, the great Fred Willard passed away over the weekend.
What a Willard, nice man.
Yeah, Willard came on our show in studio years ago. He was a huge baseball fan.
Why did he come on our show? I was trying to think of it. Why did he come on?
I don't remember, but Singer booked him. And
was it Best in Show, maybe?
Maybe. Well, that kind of has to do with what my question is. Let's say
good.
You had to explain Fred Willard to somebody who had never seen his work, and you could only show them one thing that Willard did over the years. I'll give you three choices, and you can pick one of those, or you can go off the board. All right, choice one. Anything from Fernwood Tonight. That was a 70s comedy show he did with Martin Mull.
Such a funny show.
That really... what he was great at was straight, uncomfortable humor. Like, he would try and say things. He would try and put you in situations where you're like, is he serious? I think he's serious. He was really good at that on For One Tonight. All right, choice two. His role as the news director in Anchorman, the guy who was in charge of Ron Burgundy and the news team. Willard was great in this role because he knew that these guys were all idiots, but he only cared about protecting the rating. So he let them be idiots, and he was really funny. And choice three is the one you mentioned. His role as the color commentator on Best in Show, the movie that was a spoof about the Westminster Dog Show. He was playing the Joe Garagiola role. And by the way, that was my favorite Christopher Guest movie that Willard did, but he was in a lot of those. He was in Waiting for Guffman. He was in a bunch of those. So would you pick one of my three, or would you pick something else to show Fred Willard?
I would put, I mean, I just pulled up lines from Best in Show. I don't think I could ever get used to being poked and prodded like that. I told my proctologist one time, why don't you take me out to dinner and a movie sometime? I've taken a sponge bath in smaller bowls than that. Excuse me if this is a little off the subject, but just take a guess at how much I can bench press. Come on, what do you think? Take a guess. 315 pounds at the top of my game, maxing out at 500. Just like the most random, funny, weird stuff in the world. And the fact that the co-analyst seemed to be a straight guy just made Willard stand out even more.
So he told us when he came in studio that he was basically doing the Joe Garagiola was hired to be the color guy on the Westminster Dog Show for years.
Yep.
And Joe was a good broadcaster, but he didn't know anything about dog shows. So he would just say random stuff. And Fred approached the role that way. He said, okay, just think if I say whatever pops into my head. And so he, like, right in the middle of it, there'd be a dog prancing around, and he'd go, just think. In some countries, people eat these dogs.
Yeah.
And he told us when he came in that he later heard that Garagiola was upset. He didn't find it funny. If I was Garagiola, I would have found it hilarious. Here's a great tangent on Fred Willard. So I told this story with Clinton Yates when he was on with us a couple months ago, and I kind of misremembered it. And then somebody corrected me. So when I was at UCLA, UCLA is on the quarter system, so you're in each class, you have 10 weeks. And I walk in, and one of my history professors goes, all right, I have a trivia question. And this, keep in mind, this is before the internet. He said, it's a baseball trivia question, and if you get me the answer before the final, so you have 10 weeks, you give me the correct answer, I'll give you an A, and you don't have to take the final. So I'm like, oh, this guy doesn't know how big of a sports fan I am. This is over. I'll stay up for 8 straight nights to get the answer to this. So the question was, there's been one player in the history of Major League Baseball who died as a result of something that happened in a game. It's a guy named Ray Chapman. He played for the Cleveland Indians. He was hit in the head with a fastball from a pitcher named Carl Mays, and he died as a result of the head injuries.
Right, right.
the question that my history professor asked, and he gave, he'll give anybody an A if they could get it. And remember, you couldn't Google back then. Who pinch ran for Ray Chapman? Who pinch ran for the dead guy? So in other words, you'd have to go back and find the box score from that game. And I went looking through Mace. I wrote a letter. There's no email. I wrote a letter to Baseball America. I got on the phone to the Indians.
Yep.
I got on the phone. Could not do it. Could not come up with the answer. So I told that story to Fred Willard. And later that day, Fred said, I'm great at baseball trivia. You can ask no question that I won't get the answer to. So I asked him the question. We were doing a morning show. At about 1 or 2 in the afternoon, my phone rang, and Willard had the answer. To this day, I have no idea how he got it. But he was able. I got the answer about 2 months later, but it was too late for me to get my to get my automatic A. But Willard found it in one day. He was really kind of quirky and acerbic that way. And it, one of the coolest things I ever had was I answer my phone. John? Yeah. Fred Willard. I've got the name. And he had it. I still to this day don't know how he came up with it. Now you just Google it and you can get it. But that,
He loved baseball. Loved baseball. Wonderful guy. All right, more Fast Track coming up for you next. Function's got a question. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. So funny. I just got a tweet. How do you keep winning these computer simulations, yet you're always last place in fantasy?
It's a fair question.
So it is a I got to figure out the answer to that. All right, Funch.
Fast Track.
All right, guys. Looks like Chuck E. Cheese will get a name change, but only on Grubhub. The well-known pizza chain franchise has an offshoot brand that is using on a food delivery app, which it goes by Pasquale's Pizza and Wings. Huh. It got a completely different new logo, and it doesn't make any reference to the Chuck E. Cheese name at all. Chuck E. Cheese says Pasquale's Pizza and Wings recipes use a fresh, homemade pizza dough, just like Chuck E. Cheese, but it's a different pizza that features a thicker crust and extra sauce, giving customers a more flavorful, more premium pizza experience. Now, if you ask most, Chuck E. Cheese rep on their pizza isn't exactly the best. Now, was this a brilliant move by Chuck E. Cheese since they're not known to have great pizza?
Yes, it absolutely is. I never would have ever ordered on Grubhub Chuck E. Cheese pizza. But what's it called? Pasquale's?
Pasquale's Pizza and Wings.
Probably would order from Pasquale's Pizza and Wings. Yeah, I think it's a brilliant move.
I agree. And I was thinking about something. So I wonder if we had the story, and this makes no sense. I'm saying it up front. It makes no sense. But sales of Corona beer are way down since the start of the coronavirus. Do you think they might need to change the name of the beer?
I do not. I think it would be a mistake to change the name of the beer. It is really bad luck. It is terrible luck on their part that this virus happened to be called coronavirus. But no, they've invested. And by the way, they've doubled down on ads. Like, there are a lot of Corona ads right now. I think because they want to make sure that there's a separation between COVID-19 and Corona beer. But you're right. There's some people that are pretty dumb out there who probably have made a stupid connection in their heads.
And, you know, it just, like, I've always thought, your question, Funch, is one about branding. How important is the brand name on the package? For example, Mace, all these old TV shows, like, that are syndicated, like Seinfeld and Friends.
Right.
And you know, you can find Family Ties. You can find anything.
Yeah.
I'm convinced if the Cosby Show wasn't named the Cosby Show, that they could still put it on TV. But because it's literally named the Cosby Show, you can't get around the fact that Bill Cosby's the star, and you can't find that show anywhere now.
Yeah, I would disagree. I don't think it's the name. I think it's the actual presence of Bill Cosby. You could call it the family where the guy wears the big sweaters show, and it would still be Bill Cosby in it, and there's no way anybody would air it.
Yet the other day I saw an old episode flipping channels of I Spy. which was Cosby's first show, where he had nothing, you know, where he was just one of the, it was him and Robert Culp.
What channel are you watching that's airing I Spy?
Well, we have 600 channels now. You can find anything. Maybe it was, it could, now you were actually looking at stuff through apps.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can find the Cosby Show, can you?
No, I don't think you can find it anywhere. I don't think you can find it anywhere.
Because it's damaged goods. You know, but what's interesting is, so you can still find Woody Allen movies. It hasn't affected him. But it you know, like Chuck E. Cheese, you're right. You would never order, like, if we were all having dinner tonight, if we were working on something and we all had to stay in, and I threw out the idea, hey, let's order Grubhub from Chuck E. Cheese, you guys would laugh me out of the room.
Right.
But if I said, let's order from Pasquale's, you'd say, I'll try it.
Sure. It sounds, yeah, very
sounds Italian, right?
Yeah, it
right.
sounds Italian. I'm all in. Yeah, it's very funny. It's very funny.
Funch. Yeah, they're smart.
Fast Track.
All right, Funch, I sent you a clip. I'm going to ask for it here right now. The legendary rock band AC/DC has released a brand new song. I want to play a little bit of it. It's called Great Balls. Hit it, Funch. What do you think, John?
It's not great. It doesn't have that old... Is now...
There's the chorus. There's...
Okay.
That's the chorus. So what do you think?
I used to love the old AC/DC Back in Black stuff,
yep.
But that I probably wouldn't go out and run to buy that.
So let me tell you the truth of this. This song was created by artificial intelligence. Some guys put a bunch of AC/DC songs into a bot, and the bot wrote and performed the song. Here's the problem. Here's the chorus. She got great balls and big balls. Too many women with the balls. Seems like a bone given the balls. A whole lot of woman because I'm a ball. That's the way the chorus came out. So question. You could do this with any band, and it's just a matter of time. It'll get better. That's artificial intelligence, very, very early in its history. It's going to get better. The Beatles, you could put, let's say in 10 years, you can put Beatles music into a bot, and it will release a new song. Once this is perfected, will you accept a new song from the Beatles or any other band done by AI?
So... There's a famous line from a Supreme Court justice, and he's talking about pornography.
Yes.
And he says, I don't know if I can describe it, but I know it when I see it.
Yes.
The answer to your question is, I would know when I hear it. You know, the one thing about music is, it moves you. You hear something and you go, oh, that's catchy, or that's good, or so. Until I hear it, I don't know. I wouldn't. Let me tell you this. Would I rule it out just because it's AI? No.
Like if there is a good AI Beatles song, you would say, hey, I like this song.
I would say, let me hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy that this is actual technology that can be used. Because that does sound like, if you just listen to it generally, that does sound like an AC/DC song to me. If you listen to the words, doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, she got great balls. I'm not even sure what they're doing. But the technology is going to be there, and it's going to get better.
My buddy Kelvin Gamble just sent me a text. TV1, whatever that is,
yep,
still airs The Cosby Show.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So
whatever that is. Whatever that is.
Yeah, it's still out there.
All right. Take a quick break. Coming right back with more Fast Track. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So today, Governor Newsom says we could have live sports in Los Angeles, in Southern California, in all of California, by the first week of June. That means NFL totally on tap for September. Rams will be opening SoFi Stadium Sunday night, September 13, against the Dallas Cowboys. Now, John, we've talked a little bit about this. Let's say that the city, the county, the state were to approve that you could have, say, 16,000 fans in the stadium. Everybody's socially distanced. This is a hypothetical. I don't know what the number would really be. If you're the Rams, would you want to open this great big $5 billion stadium with 16,000 fans, or would just keep it empty for this year and do a big solid blowout for the first game of 2021?
I don't think, we're going to have to get used to a new normal with fans, and there aren't going to be very many of them.
By 2021, I assume that they'll be able to have a full rockin' house.
Yeah, we don't know that. But that doesn't mean the full rockin' house will be less fun or less exciting than if I don't know how many season ticket holders the Rams have, but I would imagine it's north of 30,000.
Yeah.
If I can find a way to get them in to see, like, I'll use you as an example because you have two tickets.
Yeah.
My buddy Bill McDonald has four tickets.
Yep.
If you guys could get in next year and see SoFi in a socially distanced way, just so you can see the Oculus and see the concourse and see the stadium and kind of do a soft open, as they say. I have no problem with that. I don't think those things are mutually exclusive. I know you phrased it that way in your question, but
yeah.
I would let you in this year with socially whatever is allowed from the CDC.
Yep.
And then still invite everybody in 2021. What do you think?
I totally agree. If I can get in there this year, I will get in there this year. If I'm part of a socially distanced group, let's say it is 16,000 fans, I do have season tickets. If I can be one of those people in there, I'm going to be in there. It may not look as impressive as it would if it was a full stadium. It's unfortunate, the timing, that this happens to be this $5 billion stadium opening in the midst of this COVID-19 crisis. It's unfortunate, but if I get a chance to get in there and see a game in person in a safe and socially distanced way, even if it's just 16,000 fans, I think I would do it.
Fun.
Fast track.
All right, Mace, we talked a little bit about this with Ramona. Major League Baseball is working on a health and safety manual if and when they play this season. The manual is not finished yet, but ESPN was able to get a rough draft, and included in that draft were some big changes to traditional baseball ways. No finger licking, no spinning, no mascots, no bat boys or girls, no swapping of lineup cards, no high fives, fist bumps, no restaurants for road teams. Showers at the ballpark are discouraged. MLB would also institute new rules for on-field and dugout activities. Players not in the game would be socially distanced from one another. The use of all chewing tobacco or sunflower seeds also prohibited. You worked in minor league baseball before you became a radio guy. Which one of these restrictions are the players going to hate the most?
Oh, I think it's going to be the no showers. Because that means that guys are going to have to show up at the ballpark in uniform. A lot of guys take a shower after BP and before the game and then take another shower after the game. I think the showering thing is going to be the most contentious thing to deal with, personally. What about you?
The no seeds, I assume this means no bubble gum. Chewing tobacco people have been weaning themselves off of. But no seeds, nothing to chew or work in your mouth is going to be a big adjustment for some guys. Some of those guys are actually addicted.
Right. You can turn to gum. Gum is going to be the thing.
Well, wait a minute. Are they going to allow gum, though?
Yeah, they'll allow gum because you're not spitting.
Well, you'd be required to throw your gum away when you're done?
Throw your gum in the garbage can, yeah. Seeds, the problem is you're spitting them out all over the place. And you're basically, you are spitting. With gum, you're not spitting.
So that's
a totally different scenario.
I heard today, too, that after a strikeout, no around the horn. Like, you know how when you strike a guy out with less than two outs, you throw it to third, he throws it to second, and they throw it back to
Yes.
Like, because they don't, and any time a ball is handled by multiple players, they're going to put
a new ball
in play.
Yeah,
it's going to be a whole new world. But
and these
are
going to be hard habits for people to break.
Yeah. And I, you know what, whatever gets me baseball back, whatever gets me football back, whatever gets me basketball back, we're going to have to get adjustments. You know, it's not going to be perfect. There's going to be some, robots. But again, like, you know, we were talking earlier that you were saying you spent the whole weekend with your mom and Leo and you guys didn't watch any TV. You didn't, you just sat around and caught. Maybe they come up with new ways of doing things. Like, there's going to be, necessity is the mother of invention. So I think that we'll see some new things pop up. But what I think the bottom line is, whatever gets us sports back, everybody has got to make small sacrifices. Just do them and don't ask questions.
Yep, absolutely. I completely agree. Let's just get sports back. It's going to lead us out of this thing. Funch.
Fast track.
29-year-old Stephanie Villa Gomez says she had no choice but to become a social media influencer. She claims she lost numerous jobs because of her looks. She feels she is too attractive, and it kept causing problems with her jobs. The Florida resident says that she lost one job at a marijuana dispensary because her boss was forced to fire her because the wife was being jealous of her looks. She also had to give up two jobs as waitresses because of the jealousy her looks created and the fact that she got much bigger tips. Stephanie says, quote, I worked at a restaurant as a waitress and the coworkers hated me because the guys would go to my section, eat there. They requested me and I took home more tips. Finally, out of desperation, John, she turned to social media. She now makes $2,000 per night on a premium Snapchat account, and she makes $60,000 per month on Instagram with over 2 million followers. John, is it possible for someone to be too attractive?
100%. Happens all the time. I worked in TV news. Mace,
yes.
I cannot tell you. I worked in four different markets. I worked in Monroe, Louisiana, Beaumont, Texas, San Diego, and L.A.
Yeah.
And so news is on late at night. Like, you know, I would do the 6 and 10 or the 6 and 11. And so people would call the newsroom to complain or to, you know, comment on things. Almost always when we had attractive women on the set,
yeah,
all the comments would be about their looks. Either, you know, we get 100 phone calls about how good looking somebody is or how they didn't like their hair or love their hair or where do they get their hair done? Where did they get that blouse? Where did they get all the other calls when the calls were, you know, about men, they were about complaints. This is a real thing she's talking about. I've seen it play out in newsrooms. I've seen it play out in offices. I've seen it. And it's not just females, it's men too. Your example is a female, but good-looking people get breaks and advantages that the rest of us don't get.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not a disadvantage. It's an advantage to be good-looking.
Oh, yeah.
She's saying it was a disadvantage. She couldn't exist in the real world. She was getting fired from jobs because she was too attractive. So she had no choice but to turn to social media. No, it's a huge advantage to be good-looking,
but wait a minute,
beautiful, or to be handsome.
She's making more money doing social media than she was doing those other jobs. Why is she complaining?
But she says, John, she turned to it out of desperation because she was too pretty. She was too beautiful.
I do believe,
sexy.
Yeah, I do believe you can be those things. Kate Beckinsale basically has made an industry out of just taking pictures of herself and posting them.
Well, you know, it's funny. Charlize Theron has said that she feels like she's so attractive, and she's not. I don't think she's being like, it's not bragging, but that because she is so attractive, that guys are intimidated and won't actually approach her. And I would argue this is why the sort of dorky looking guy always winds up with the most attractive women, because they'll go up and talk to her because they got nothing else. They got nothing to lose. So you'll see beautiful women with totally dorky guys. And I think it's because that guy was just, he's like, I got nothing to lose. I'm going to walk up and talk to Charlize or whatever beautiful woman it is. I think that beautiful women, handsome men, get most of the breaks, and they get to coast through life. That's my view of it.
I don't disagree. And by the way, the reason you see beautiful women with dorky guys,
yeah,
pocket personality. The dorky guy almost always is a rich guy.
Yeah, that may be true. That may be true.
Almost always.
All right, more Fast Track coming up next for you, Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, rolling on with Fast Track in Ireland. It's to you.
Fast Track.
All right, guys, I have a game. It'll just be, well, you guys work together on this, actually.
Okay.
Lindsay's not here today, so we have Funch and Mason. Mace, you've been watching The Sopranos.
Yes.
And the other day on YouTube, I saw a Sopranos dictionary. I'll throw out some words. You guys see if you can tell me what these words mean.
Okay.
If you don't know, try to guess. These are words that were said multiple times on The Sopranos. Okay?
Okay.
The first word is gabagool. G-A-B-A-G-O-O-L. Gabagool.
Gabagool.
What gabagool. Is gabagool? Funch, you know? You have any idea?
Is that like a term for like an idiot?
Gabagool.
No, good
no,
guess.
No, I think
like
maybe
a derogatory term.
What about a thug?
No. I'll give you a hint. If you go into Artie's Italian restaurant, he's got some great gabagool.
What is it, like spaghetti or something?
It's a pork cold cut.
Now, how and the now, hell are we going to get that?
No. If you, but now, Mace, now that yeah. you know, now that you know that they on this YouTube clip, they put like 10 instances of like Paulie Walnuts and Tony and Meadow and Carmella and Silvio all saying, "God, give me some of that gabagool." We went over there. We had some gabagool. Now that you know what it is, you'll go, "Oh my God!" They say this word all the time.
Yes.
Okay. All right. There are only five of these. Number two.
Okay.
Snakes with fur.
Snakes with fur.
What do you guys think?
I'd say maybe a snitch.
Okay.
I think I'm a snitch. I think it's a snitch too.
No, I thought you guys would say it's like a woman wearing a mink coat that was, you know, like two-faced. It's simple. It's a house cat. Paulie and Chris don't like cats.
Snake with fur. That's great.
So a cat will run in. Tony likes cats.
Yeah.
So a cat will run into like a shot and they'll say, "Oh, come here, kitty." And Paulie will go, "That stupid cat, snakes with fur."
That's great. That's great.
All right. Now, this is one that comes up a lot. All right. Well, the next two come up a lot. All right. A sit down. You guys know what a sit down is?
Yeah, when he, like, two gangs or something that don't like each other have a, you know, get together for a meeting.
Pretty close. A formal gathering of family members to discuss family business. Now,
okay,
this is another one where you'll hear it almost every show. You'll go, "Well, Tony, you got to have a sit down with Uncle June and straighten this out, man. You got Richie Aprile. You got to have a sit down with this guy, man." You know,
be careful you don't spoil anything for me. I mean, I just saw Richie get whacked, but by Janice. But don't spoil any of the rest of it for me.
Okay, two more. A guma.
Yeah, that's a side piece. That's a side piece.
Very good.
I heard that one last night, and I actually looked it up. It's the woman on the side.
Put simply, it's the mistress of a mafia member.
Yeah, yeah, because Carm's really upset about the Russian guma.
Yeah, and all these guys have gumas.
Yes.
Like there isn't one main character. All right, the last one is Madone. M-A-D-O-N-E, Madone. You guys want to take a shot?
Means somebody's Madone. Somebody's dumb.
Okay, Funch, you got any guesses?
I was going to say like an idiot or something.
Okay, it's short for Madonna. It invokes surprise at something, usually news. Like if you were to say to us, Sliwa just came up with a really great idea, I would say, Madone. You know, if you're surprised, right? Yeah, you know, or Chris Morales is in a really good mood. Madone. He's never in a good mood. You know, Madone is invoking surprise at somebody. So you'll hear Paulie Walnuts uses that one a lot, and so does Christopher. Like they'll say, "Hey, so and so got whacked," and Paulie will go, "Madone, didn't see that coming." you know, blah blah blah. So it's short for so now basically those are the five.
Yep.
Gabagool, snakes with fur.
Yep.
Sit down.
Yep.
Guma and Madone. Yep. Now that you know those, you'll be surprised how often they come up on the show.
Excellent, excellent. All right, Funch.
Fast track.
So Monday Night Football is under a reorganization right now here at ESPN, and somebody has put out a list of odds on who the color commentator will be for the 2020 season. So I'm going to give you the names and the odds.
Okay.
Brian Griese is the favorite at 3-1. Dan Orlovsky, Louis Riddick, and Matt Hasselbeck each at 5-1. Kurt Warner is 6-1, and Kirk Herbstreit is 7-1. There are some longer shots. Pat McAfee, 9-1. Jay Cutler, 10-1. Nate Burleson, 10-1. Bill Barnwell is 20-1. Eli Manning, 40-1. And then, stupidly, Colin Kaepernick, 50-1. John, who do you think winds up as the color commentary on Monday Night Football in 2020?
Am I allowed to bet mythical money on this?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
With those odds?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
All right, give me $5,000 on Pat McAfee at 9-1.
Really?
Yeah. Because I think they're going to try something here. The other guy I would bet on, if I wasn't going to take McAfee, would be Orlovsky.
Orlovsky is my pick. I'm a big Orlovsky fan. I think he'd be great. Pat McAfee, wow. I see him on the get up. That's a bit of a long shot. Hey, Funch, will you remind Lindsay to put that down? 5,000 for John.
Already wrote it down.
Pat McAfee. Wow,
way,
$5,000.
Funch, what do you think of everybody on that list?
I mean, I guess you got to go with Greasy since he's a top favorite, right?
Although he's such a straight arrow.
They must know something, though, right?
Yeah. McAfee just left another job.
He was in Columbus, wasn't he?
I don't remember.
Is he the guy that was in Columbus working and then moved to New York?
I can't remember, but he was doing a national radio show for somebody. And it may have been for The Athletic. It may have been for Barstool. I can't remember who. And he just left it, and it opens him up to take this gig. And
interesting.
He's goofy.
Yeah, so, he is.
And you kind of need goofy for Monday Night Football.
Yep, he's funny. He's a funny guy.
But and then who do they think? Do they issue odds on?
On play-by-play. No, they do not issue odds on play-by-play. Just on color commentator. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a three-man booth.
Yeah, I heard Steve Levy, Lou Riddick, and Orlovsky thrown out there, which would be fine.
I think that's a good one. I think that's a good one. All right, John, do you have another one?
Yeah, I can do one more.
Cool.
Okay, let me see if I can find this other one, and if not, I'll do it because I had a good Rams question for you. Okay, here it is. Last week, Chris Sims from Pro Football Talk reported that 2 years ago when Cleveland had the number one pick, that's the year they took Baker Mayfield.
Yes.
There was talk that the Seahawks and Browns were discussing a trade that would have sent Russell Wilson to Cleveland and the number one pick to Seattle.
Wow.
Sims says he doesn't know which team initiated the trade talks, but the deal was close to happening. He's guessing it was Seattle. Sims says the Seahawks then would have taken Josh Allen, who is now the starting quarterback for a playoff team in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Now, the logic for Seattle in this scenario makes sense. Wilson makes $35 million a year. And when the Seahawks made the Super Bowl twice, Wilson was on his rookie deal. Same last year with Patrick Mahomes. Same with Jared Goff when the Rams went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. So the moral of the story is, if you don't have to pay your quarterback, you can use that $35 million to bring in a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
So here's my question. If you, and be honest, if you were Les Snead, the Rams GM,
yes,
and you could get a top 15 pick for Jared Goff, wouldn't you do that deal? No slight on Goff, but Goff now makes so much money you can't pay anybody else. If you could take a top rookie QB next year, would you trade Goff? So under this scenario, Goff plays for you this year.
Yep.
Then at the end of the year, he's still got all that money on his contract.
Do I get Trevor Lawrence?
No, maybe not him, but you get somebody in the top that you get, like Jordan Love this year. Like the Packers moved
one
up
of those guys
to get Jordan Love, yeah. Or you maybe get a guy like, who's the guy the Chargers took? Justin Herbert.
Justin Herbert, yeah.
One, let's say somebody like that. You get, you move Jared Goff, you get out from under his deal, and then you basically bring in a rookie to start the year after.
See, you know what? I don't like that because I think you're automatically in a rebuild. Like, I think the Chargers are in a rebuild because they've got Tyrod Taylor
when Russell
leading
Wilson
to Justin Herbert.
Was a rookie, he took him deep. He took him to the Super Bowl.
He did take him deep. You're right. But he was the exception. Generally speaking,
Josh
rookie
Allen
quarterbacks.
Josh Allen took the Bills to the playoffs last year.
But that was his second year, wasn't it?
I can't remember. Was it
I think it was his second year.
Yeah, so you might have to wait a year. You might have to wait a year for your quarterback to get ready.
No, I mean, I think the Rams can win right now. I don't think I would do it. I'm shocked that Seattle would consider trading Russell Wilson because he is the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, he is and he is a when was this trade?
Well,
when
this 2 years ago. So think about all the people they had to get rid of.
The Browns the Browns would have had an unbelievable quarterback. The Browns would have been in the playoffs by now. The Browns would have been in the playoffs.
That was at
Russell
the time
Wilson
when,
instead of Baker Mayfield.
When they had Hugh Jackson at coach and they had lost like 30 of 31 games, you think Wilson turns that around right away?
I think Wilson is one of my favorite players in the league to watch. I think he is absolutely fantastic. And even with a leaky offensive line, he is able to create space for himself and able to make throws that nobody in the league can make. Russell Wilson is just... Man, when the Rams are playing Seattle, I am just holding my breath every time Russell Wilson touches the football. He is just a magnificent quarterback.
The other example of a guy who was decent as a rookie and then just took off in his second year was Lamar Jackson.
Oh, yeah, second year, right.
And
right.
he was the 32nd pick in the draft.
But here's the thing. There's just no guarantees that you're going to get that one. You get the 15th
pick. Patrick Mahomes, second year, right?
Second year, but look at all the guys that flop. Look at all the guys that it doesn't work. You're one of those guys that says take proven over unproven. I mean, give me proven in this case. I would never be the guy that drafts a rookie quarterback in the first round. I just would not be that guy. I wouldn't have drafted Goff. I wouldn't have drafted Carson Wentz. I would have traded down and found a veteran quarterback. That's what I would have done if I was Les Snead that year. I know they wanted to make a splash.
Well,
and all
can't
that.
We argue? Yeah, but and can't we argue that in leading them to the Super Bowl in his second year, Goff proved
it was
them
a
right.
success. He proved them right. Absolutely. All right, there you have your fast track coming up. Oh, ladies and gentlemen. It is time. It's that special time of the night. Sun is going down. Mason in Ireland about to hit the door at 6:24. Along comes Alan Sliwa. It's crosstalk now. Sliwa at sunset. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Also known as the most awkward 30 minutes on radio. Time, people. It's him. From his one-room apartment in Chinatown, after a long day of walking through his neighborhoods.
In the rain.
In the rain, yeah. Sliwa joins us. Sliwa at sunset. Sliwa, what are you doing, man?
What part is most awkward?
Of
kind
this
of the
half
whole
hour?
Thing. Yeah,
the whole thing.
Or, okay.
And by the way, it's meant to be. It's on purpose.
Yes. Yeah.
It's us putting you in uncomfortable situations. That's our job, Alan.
You guys are executing perfectly.
Thank you. Did you watch the Last Dance last night?
Oh, man. The only disappointing thing is it's over. That's it.
I know.
Are you guys going to watch the new docs that are coming out? Are you going to watch them live like you watched The Last Dance, or you just tape them and watch them whenever?
I'm going to watch them live. I'm gonna try to. I mean, it's not as good like the Lance Armstrong the next 2 weeks. I'm definitely gonna watch them, and I'm gonna watch them on the night that they come out. I cannot wait for the Bruce Lee one. I'm just a huge Bruce Lee fan, and B Water I think is the one that's on June the 7th. That one I really cannot wait for. I hear it's fantastic. It played at Sundance, so I'm definitely gonna watch that one as it happens. But yeah, I'm gonna try to treat these as live. What about you?
I think I'll tape them and watch them whenever. I've been planning my nights around The Last Dance. I mean, like, I've been specifically blocking 6 to 8 so I could watch them when they happened and react to them right away. I don't know if I'll do that with any of these three. I'll watch them, though. I've watched all the 30 for 30s. I think they're all good.
The Bruce Lee one, I'm with you, Mace. And I actually think the Sosa-McGuire one would be interesting as well. The Lance Armstrong, do I think I'm going to sit the next two Sundays and wait for it like I was waiting for The Last Dance? I don't think I'll do that.
The Bruce Lee one, I think, is going to be an event. The Bruce Lee one, I think, is going to be cool. I'm not Last Dance level event. Can you imagine? You know, I think about 15 million people watched Last Dance last night. Can you imagine what the rating was in Chicago?
Oh,
it must have been just gigantic. It must have been like World Series kind of ratings.
Nothing in Utah.
Terrible writing in Utah.
You know, I heard an interview with Jason Hare, the director, and they, I think it was with Dan Patrick, and he said, were there people you couldn't get? Like people that said no. And it kind of surprised me. He said Karl Malone refused to do it. Brian Russell refused to do it.
Oh, interesting.
Probably because they knew, you know, what they were going to ask him. But he obviously couldn't get Krause because he'd passed away.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said almost everyone else that they really wanted, they were able to get.
So, Slimo, what do you think? Would they have won their seventh?
Well, Mace, I was just going to say, when you guys mentioned Malone right there, what a moment that was. When he walks onto the bus after
the bus,
they lose, goes all the way to the back to Michael Jordan to congratulate him. And, you know, we spent two episodes, I think, talking about how Isaiah and the Pistons would have congratulated the Bulls. Here's Karl Malone going on the bus. I know they were, you know, obviously good friends. You know, listen, the seventh championship, I think whether they would have won it or not, it's disappointing they didn't get a chance to – that dynasty didn't get broken up because they lost to another team. Like, think of every great dynasty, right? The Lakers in the Showtime era, there were losses. It wasn't just they were going undefeated and there was no problem with anybody. Eventually they lost to that Chicago Bulls team. Of course, that's without Kareem. Kobe and Shaq, there were losses. Even LeBron James and the Miami Heat, every dynasty has losses. And the one thing I think that probably sticks in – Wilbon said this earlier today. He said that Jordan was never satisfied with his 6-0 record in the finals. Doesn't part of you almost feel, as amazing and unbelievable as that undefeated record is, they wanted somebody to take it from them rather than internally the front office strip it away from them?
Right. They wanted to lose it on the court. Like, the Lakers came – when the Lakers finally lost after winning in 09 and 10, they got smashed by the Mavericks.
Mm-hmm,
they got swept in Dallas. That was Phil Jackson's last game as a Laker coach, was an absolute blowout in Dallas. But still, they were given the chance to defend it. And then it was after that you know, things started to get broken up. But
given the fact that, and we've talked a lot about this today, Alan, Ramona wrote a really good piece on it. Casey Johnson wrote a really good piece on it. You know, if they analyzed this, it wasn't just like random. They looked at Pippen. They said, well, you know, he's going to really want to get paid. He's really alienated from the organization, and he's not as healthy as he has been. You saw him struggle with the back in Game 6 in 98. You saw Dennis Rodman became sort of a circus act at some point, went to the WWF in the middle of the NBA Finals, and went on to play only 35 games after that 98 championship series. And the inability to keep free agents together. You know, they thought a lot about this. They analyzed the health of guys. I don't know that they, even if they had all come back on one-year contracts like Jordan suggested, I think somebody was going to get them.
You know, but even with that, Mace, let's say somebody got him. We use that Lakers when they lost to the Pistons in 2005.
Yep.
2005, right? When they lost to that Pistons team, you know, they had their core. They reloaded a little bit and took their chances to see what would happen against the Pistons. At least they gave themselves a shot. What have the Bulls been since that year? What have they been? You know what I mean?
They've been rebuilding.
they've been rebuilding for 20 plus years. But you know what else kind of is crazy? When you're seeing those highlights against the Pacers and you start going back of all the different teams that the Bulls had to beat, just think of this. Just think of the probably arguably the best Seattle Supersonics team they've ever put together. Had to go through Chicago. It didn't happen. One of the best Phoenix Suns team had to go through Chicago. Never happened. One of the best Knicks teams. One of the best Pacers team. I mean, just go down the list of all these teams that not one cracked the Chicago Bulls when they went 6-1.
And by the way, look at the individual players who were blocked by Jordan, whether it be Karl Malone or Charles Barkley or Reggie Miller.
Patrick Ewing.
Patrick Ewing. They were all blocked during that era from winning because of Michael Jordan. It's in any other era, the Jazz might have won a championship, probably would have won a championship. That was a great team, particularly the 96-97. I thought the 96-97 team was better than the 97-98 team. Am I right or am I wrong?
The 96 Bulls were the 71
team. No, the Jazz. Which year were the Jazz better, the first year or the second year? I thought the first year they were better.
The second year the Jazz had...
I thought they had their best chance in that last one.
Right, they had a better record. They had home court in the second
That's right,
second
they
one.
Did have home court, sure. Boy, those are some mean fans, huh? That is just... That Utah, I mean, that's the most... The happiest place on earth. You think of Salt Lake City as all, you know, scrubbed up and nice.
How about, how about that gal that just kept cursing? She just
just unreal how ugly those fans get in Salt Lake City. It seems so out of character from the city itself.
Yeah, the worst fan behavior I have ever seen. And you can dig around and you can find this picture on the internet. Ever seen from any fan ever. And I thought this was, well, I'll give you two of them. So Steve Kerr last night told the story. Everybody learned about the story. And Steve Kerr's going to join us on our show tomorrow. Yeah. His dad was assassinated at American University in Beirut. And so he was playing at Arizona. And Arizona and Arizona State are bitter rivals. So there was a game in Tempe. And Steve Kerr got up to shoot a free throw. And the student section at ASU started chanting PLO, PLO.
Oh,
which was one of the groups that was claiming responsibility
that is
for the murder of his father. And Lute Olson walked over, the head coach at Arizona walked over and grabbed the public address announce microphone and said, "What is wrong with you? Shut up, or I'm taking my team off the court." And they shut up.
Oh, jeez. So, that is so horrifying.
Okay. So it's either that's even the worst fan behavior I've ever seen, or so fast forward 20-plus years later. Derek Fisher is playing for the Lakers, and he leaves. I think he went to the Warriors first, and then he went to the Jazz. After that 05, the team Allen was talking about after the Lakers lost to Detroit.
Yep.
And Derek Fisher left for a while. His young daughter, Tatum, who was 2 at the time, was diagnosed with retinoblastoma, which is basically cancer in one of your eyes. And there were only a handful of cancer centers that could treat that specific type of cancer. There's one in New York. There was one in L.A. There's one somewhere else. So Fisher asked the Jazz if they would release him from his contract so he could go play in one of the towns where his daughter could get treated for retinoblastoma. And the Jazz said yes and let him go. So he comes back with the Lakers and he's shooting free throws. And somebody behind the basket trying to get him to shoot free throws starts covering up one of his eyes.
Yeah, that's just horrifying.
And, you know, to mock Fisher for leaving to go take care of his daughter. And I thought it was the most unconscionable thing I've ever seen. And it was only one guy. But I thought, really? This is what it's come to?
Yeah.
People will just lose all sense of reality and do stuff like that?
Yep.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
John, are they known in the NBA as, and I think I've heard this from, didn't Russell Westbrook have a, wasn't his, one of his issues that he had, I think it was in Utah, are they known in the NBA as being one of the more, listen, it's okay to be loud and crazy, but, you know, obviously still be respectful, but I feel like they have a really bad rap. And that surprises me from, you know, most fan bases. I wouldn't think Utah would be the fan base that has a bad rap, but John, do they have a pretty bad rap around the league?
Well, they have a very loud building, which of course is good for the home team. But yeah, they have been known to be mean. I think the meanest fans in the league are in Philly, but that's for every sport. But the Philly fans, I kind of respect because they'll boo their own team. You know, they're
they hate
bad play. But I hate to lump in. I hate to generalize and say, you know, an entire team's group of fans is bad just because of a few handful of guys. But they, yeah, I mean, there have been some pretty ugly signs and some pretty ugly treatment of players over the years. It's not the whole fan base, but yeah, Utah is known to be pretty mean. But again, I don't want to, you know, kneecap the whole fan base over just a couple of guys.
What overall, Alan? What's your takeaway from this miniseries, this documentary series?
I love learning. Like, Jordan is Jordan, and I'm not saying I didn't learn too much about him, but I think that I didn't walk away on Jordan saying, okay, he was the greatest before I walked in the documentary. He's the greatest after. It was great to see some of those storylines, but I love the side stories. I love, actually, Scottie Pippen to me was one of the more intriguing players in this whole thing. I don't think there's enough fingers pointed at Jerry Reinsdorf. We did this.
I 100% agree with you.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, remember after the first week when Krause was just getting demolished, and the director actually was on with Scott Van Pelt yesterday and saying, that wasn't my intention. My intention was not to, you know, draw Jerry Krause as this villain. It just was naturally happening. But I remember after the first week, we were all talking about this. I'm like, what? Reinsdorf writes the checks. I mean, if Reinsdorf wanted to kind of keep this thing going, he could have stopped it, you know?
Yeah, and he kind of indicated it was a lot of money that he was going to have to pay to keep that group together. And it was a cost-benefit analysis for him. Is it worth it? Do I think I'm going to win another championship with this group? And he kind of decided, no, he could have stepped in and made it happen. He could have done exactly what Michael Jordan had suggested, offer everybody a one-year contract to come back, and maybe get that band, keep that band together. But Reinsdorf elected to stand down. He did offer Phil the contract, but he did not stop Krause from making any of those moves that he viewed as necessary. And I'm sorry, when you're the owner, you're co-signing moves when it involves star players.
By the way, that when they're replaying that game, and you know, we always go back to Russell, Jordan pushing off on Russell, hitting that final shot. We go to that moment, but when they were going through the entire game, I'm just sitting there in my mind, I'm like, Jesus, the Jazz, what a choke job. And I'm not even talking about that last 30 seconds. John, they have home court. Scottie Pippen is in and out of the entire game with those back issues that he was having. They had a lead at one point. If you win this game now, it's game 7 in Utah. Utah had every chance, like almost zero excuse not to make that game go to game 7. And that's not taken away from Jordan. I know Jordan's three amazing plays to end the game. But I was just looking back at that game, like, how are they even this close with Pippen virtually doing nothing for them? I mean, literally every play he's grimacing.
Well, that's how hard Jordan was to kill. I mean, there's a reason that not only is Jordan 6-0 in the NBA Finals, but Alan, nobody ever took him 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. 6-0 in the NBA Finals, and nobody even took him to a 7th game. He either won it in 5 or 6 every single time. And, you know, to me, that's his legacy, is that when you know, Magic in the finals is 5-4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kobe in the finals is 5-2. LeBron in the finals, has a losing record.
3-6. Mm-hmm.
But to be 6-0 in the finals is pretty amazing. Now, here's the interesting thing, though. I don't think Magic and LeBron get enough credit for making it to as many finals as they did. LeBron made it to 8 straight finals.
Mm-hmm.
8 straight. It basically means if you have LeBron on your team, you're going to the finals. In the 90s, if you had Jordan on your team,
you were basically going to the
right,
finals.
But it's a zero-sum game, John. In history, it's a zero-sum game. Nobody remembers. Yeah, but Malone went to two finals. No.
Yeah, but do you remember that? Do you remember Magic went to nine?
I do. I remember Magic winning more than he lost.
Right. I just think it's pretty amazing to put your team and on your back and carry him basically by yourself to the finals.
Well, especially, John, the teams he had. You know, like you're mentioning right there, the year he had Kyrie and Kevin Love, they came back, they win the championship in Cleveland. After that, I mean, you just look at that roster. It's like Richard Jefferson, Amon Shumpert, J.R. Smith. But, Mace, you're right. At the end of the day, we're doing that ranking of the greatest of all time, right? The one yep. ESPN was doing last week. That I think about that every time. I'm like, where do I put LeBron? You know, it does. Like, it's in my mind. And it's sometimes not fair, but that's our gauge that we use when we're talking about the greats.
You know, Alan, I take emails at venicemace@gmail.com, and Beauregard Williamson just emailed me. He said, "Dear Mace in Ireland, I love Alan Sliwa, but why does it sound like he always has severe nasal congestion? Tell him to mix in a Claritin every once in a while." Signed, Beauregard in Pacific Palisades. Have you thought about Claritin, Alan?
I have not thought about Claritin. And for those who are out there, at Alan Sliwa, if there's anything you guys would like me to pass along to Mason in Ireland, more than happy to pass.
Trying to turn things around. I see you trying to turn things around. That's cute the way you're doing that. All right, coming up next, Alan's got a read of a sponsorship. Then we're going to find out what he's got in the can, and then he's going to take over and tee up his whole show and what he's got coming up. And, of course, big moment, 6:24, we hit the door. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. You know, I laugh every time I hear that bit. Every time, we should keep that alive forever. 20 years you're doing this show, Alan.
I remodeled the place.
I still want to hear that.
200 square feet now.
So don't you have something to read, Alan?
I do, but I'm not prepared at the moment, so you do what you're going to do right there. Crosstalk on 710, powered by PowerPro and their cross-trade services. Servicing plumbing plus heating and air. Great power specials right now. $99 drain cleaning or $59 AC tune-up, which includes a safety inspection and a temporary disinfect for your HVAC system. Make an appointment today. Call 800-584-4116 or visit powerproplumbing.com. Why is he saying I'm nasally? This is the clearest I've ever sounded.
Yeah, take a Claritin. All right, so I got this email from Nathan Hines, John. Okay. It says, "This is Nate from Irvine. I'm a college student. Love the show. Explain to me how John Ireland has so many plumbing issues for somebody as well off as him. I mean, he's got Power Pro in his house every other week."
I do. The answer is I
you
live in an old...
have so many plumbing issues.
My house was built, let me see, 27... My house is 47 years old. And I think it still has a lot of the original plumbing.
It's a classic.
So it's, you know, it just gets old. So you got to deal with it.
You do.
They're awesome. Alan knows those guys. Alan is the guy who introduced me to Raul, the guy who runs Power Pro Plumbing. They're the best.
Yeah.
They're in, they're out, they're done. It's affordable. They're great.
Yep. All right. So, Sliwa, what's in the can?
Now, first of all, how many guests?
So, Mace.
Alan, how many guests?
First.
Yeah.
Three guests tonight.
Three guests. Okay.
All right, Mace, how many do you think? Over, under one and a half in the can.
I'm going to go over. I think he's got two in the can.
I say under. Only one in the can. One or maybe zero in the can. Alan, what? Okay, let's $1,000 in mythical money if either one of us gets it right. One of us has to get it right. Lindsay's not working today. All right, so I say under one and a half. Mason says over. What is the correct answer?
All three live, guys.
No!
Now, that's one victory for me.
What?
The other victory is Mason actually says he does not remember. He does not remember. All right, how many from the Athletic, Mace? Over, under, a half?
Definitely one. There's definitely somebody
I'm also
from
going,
the Athletic.
I'm actually going over. We're both going over. Alan, how many from the Athletic?
None.
None.
Wow. What a night.
I love
three
that.
Live interviews and I nobody the from athletic the Athletic.
NBA related,
Mace.
NBA related, one and a half is the number.
Oh, over. That's his wheelhouse.
Let's see.
You got to go over on this.
Yeah, I'm going over. Over 1.5 NBA related. What is it, Alan?
3.
Yes!
Yeah, I knew it.
On a Monday after the last
well, it's Lakers talk.
Dance.
Lakers talk tonight.
Oh, it is Lakers talk. I thought Lakers talk moved tonight. To Tuesdays.
Yeah.
What
no,
the hell's
Lakers,
the difference?
No,
what is, why is it, why is it Lakers talk? Why isn't it just your show?
Lakers talk, 4 years now we've been doing it on Mondays. So that's gotta continue. So only difference is I'm not going to talk about anything else. I'm literally going to just hit predominantly on the NBA and Lakers.
That's basically
okay,
could I read this?
Could I read this post on Instagram?
Oh,
somebody
please.
Thinks they have a bit for me with you guys.
Okay. Good.
Should
right,
I share
okay,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. Please.
Okay. Rajiv Kapoor says, dude,
I
you need to
Rajiv.
Start giving back to John and Steve. Okay?
Yes.
Says, game from Sliwa. What was more embarrassing, the mace plant or John saying, what's up, players? Ask callers to give your dirt stuff to go back at them. That's the bit. What do you think?
Oh,
they got legs?
That's a great bit. That's a great bit. That's got legs. Unfortunately, I know Rajiv, and I am no longer going to return his text messages. I cannot
wow.
believe he's jumping on your IG and encouraging you to take out bits against us. But listen, Alan, look, right now you're like a defenseless little bunny. You know, we're big bears. And
okay, that's not
bunny.
Good. That's not
you're
a good little, description.
You're a little bunny. So you need
what
some
is this,
weapons.
Swingers? Is this Vince Vaughn talking?
I'm doing the swingers bit. We're a great big bear, and you're just a little defenseless bunny. So come up with some bits. Go ahead. Ask
oh,
people to help
awesome.
You out. Yeah.
All right, now, the other day we played a
all
game
let's
that,
do, let's,
Mason swore he finished ahead mm-hmm. of me. I swore I finished ahead of him, and we bet $5,000 of mythical money. Alan went back and listened to it. I did indeed finish ahead of him, but Mason is now denying that he ever agreed to the bet.
I don't remember a bet. I don't remember
right.
any bet.
Funches has been assigned to find the end of the show from Friday where Mason
oh, this
agreed
poor kid.
To the
You're
bet.
Asking too much.
I got it, guys. I got it.
Okay.
I got a good 45 seconds of it.
All right, here we go. This is and Mason has agreed in advance.
And Funch, even the game part? Even the game part?
Yeah, even a question
sure.
and everything else, yeah.
All right, so
oh,
Mason
okay.
has agreed to
okay.
pay right. if he actually did make a bet that he's trying to deny he made. Here's the Wayback Machine from Friday.
Casino.
Johnson.
John.
Sharon Stone.
That was so me.
That was not you.
That was so me.
You're out of your mind.
That was completely me.
Okay, hey,
am
hey.
I just whistling by the... seriously.
I think
right,
it was.
I will bet...
And John just yells so loud.
No, no,
just,
I will bet
you...
Be, hey,
over-modulating you're over-modulating right now. You need to turn your game down.
Funch, what was it? Funch, who was it?
It is a trick.
Got to go back and listen to the replay.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
Go back and listen. Mason. I'll bet
you
$5,000.
By the way, you've been overmodulating the entire day. You are Mr. Overmodulation. That's why you're so much louder than me.
Put your money where your mouth is. I'll bet you $5,000.
$5,000 mythical
first.
Dollars. Done. $5,000 mythical dollars. I was first.
Good work.
Okay,
Fudge.
But who was first? Do you agree, John? Do you agree it was you?
100%.
I don't. But and I'm completely right. You are overmodulating the entire time. There's no way I can get a word in edgewise because you're so overmodulating. And by the way, you were Captain Overmodulation today.
So
you're Mr. Overmodulation.
Doesn't matter. I still won.
Yeah, that makes you louder than me. So of course your name is going to sound louder.
And it went first.
Fully disputed. Fully
Mace,
disputed.
Mace, if you played the game in the volume you have right now, you'd be right up there with him.
Hang on a second. Let me try this. Mason! How's that? would that break through? From now on, I'm going to turn my gain up whenever we play a game. Mason! Mason!
That's
like
smart.
That.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Smart.
Funch, who was first on there? Funch.
Play right now. We'll play right now.
Johnson.
Yeah, see, really close. Really, really close.
So friggin' close.
Doesn't
I don't
get any closer.
Get
doesn't get
Alan,
any closer.
Alan, who was first?
I feel like I'm hearing John right before me.
Right before. I do too. I agree.
Yeah.
$5,000.
Yes. I'm overmodulating from now on.
There you go.
6:24. We hit the door. How about that?
Oh, it is 6:24.
Yeah.
All right, Sliwa.
It's like an airport announcement. Flight number 642, leaving gate number 4.
Sliwa, enjoy your 3 live guests.
Yeah.
Jamal Wilkes coming up, guys. Jamal Wilkes coming up at 7.
Hey, Hall of Famer Jamal Wilkes.
That's right.
Silk.
All right, tomorrow.
Silk Hall of Famer, you're right.
Tomorrow, we've got Steve Kerr on the show, so make sure you're here. 2:55 tomorrow afternoon, 6:24, we hit the door. It's Lakers Talk with Sliwa next, 710 ESPN.